That was for Sheila, not me, for sure. Good morning. We got Mike. Okay, good. Well, of course, it's the first day, and we have to have tech troubles. Otherwise, it wouldn't be growth groups. So that's good, because my anxiety level is high, so it should be a great morning. No, I'm just kidding. It's going to be great. Someone asked me yesterday, what are you doing tomorrow? Because they wanted me to come for a meeting, and I said, well, I've got this little thing that I do on Tuesday starting tomorrow. What is it? Some of you that have been in growth groups with me before, you know that these stories just crop up. I said, well, it's a Bible study. Oh, really? What are you studying? Well, we're going to be studying Ecclesiastes and talking about how do you move from survival to thriving. Really, who comes to the Bible study? I said, 200 of my best women friends. And he backed away slowly. So this year, we're going to do something just a little bit different. Let me just walk you through the book real quick, and that way you'll get an idea. So on page one, it says, Thrive, Lesson 1. And you'll notice that it has a preparation on Monday. So obviously you didn't have this yesterday, but next Monday you'll have an assignment to do your preparation for Tuesday. Then on September 22nd, it says, Tuesday, teaching in small group, pray, Lord, open the eyes of my heart, show me your truth, guide me into your path, teach me your way, in Jesus' name. Would you pray that with me out loud right now? Ready? Here we go. If you pray that every week, that's a great opening prayer. A lot of people have said to me, Pastor Glenn, how do you pray? So I've sprinkled this whole handbook with different ways of praying. Then you'll notice the key themes for this morning are put in a bullet point there. Then some questions for understanding. This will help you get into understanding the chapter that I'm about to read. Then insights and conversation with Jesus. That will be where I bring it into dialogue with what Jesus had to say. And then questions, or rather then, we move from there to Wednesday, mindful reflection. So that means tomorrow, what I'd like you to do is take 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It doesn't take longer than that. You can spend longer than that if you want to, and do this mindful reflection. What insights did you gain from your growth group experience yesterday? How can you bring more meaning into your life this week? What do you want to ask from Jesus this week in prayer? Journal any thoughts, questions, or impressions that occur to you. Then Thursday, there's a holy experiment. For a few moments, meditate on these questions. And there are some questions. And then you're supposed to journal that. Friday, self-care. How many of you have a hard time caring for yourself? I do. So every Friday is self-care day. That means you got to focus on you. And there are some questions there to help you do that. Saturday, every Saturday is a grateful day. And there are different assignments for that. On this particular one, write in your journal the things I'm most grateful for right now are. You can take 2 minutes to do that, or you can take an hour. It's entirely up to you. Then Sunday, or somewhere on the weekend, I'm assuming that all of you will find your way to worship. And many of you I know are from Good Shepherd. Some are from churches all around. God bless you. I'm glad we can serve the body of Christ that way. We welcome you from any tradition that you come from. Go back to your place of worship and do that. But do it with this in mind. Today in worship, complete the following sentences in your journal. I felt, I learned, God whispered. If you will take these little assignments every single day, there are 84 days worth of assignments. People say to me all the time, Pastor Glenn, how do I get close to God? I want to feel God's presence. I want to feel God's spirit. How do I do that? This is my answer. You practice the presence of Jesus on a daily basis. And this is a way to do that. You can take 5 minutes to do it. You can take 10 minutes. You can take an hour. It's entirely up to you. If you miss a day, you miss a day. This will also give you some interesting things to have conversations about in your small group. So again, there's something for you to do every single day. I also have a journal, so I will be journaling the same things. I'll be doing it just like you. Several times in my life I've tried to journal and it hasn't gone so well, but this summer a bunch of things happened in my life and journaling became a really powerful spiritual discipline. And now I can look back over my journal from the last month just, and I've got all these notes and insights and whispers and prayers and concerns and thoughts and joys. And it's a powerful thing to look back and see the way God has worked in my life in the last 6 weeks. If you don't have time to do it, you don't have time to do it. But if you don't have time to take 5 minutes to spend with God, then it gets hard to get close to God. So that's what this is all about. Secondly, we're going to use Ecclesiastes as a jumping off point. We're going to get into that in just a minute. Ecclesiastes is a wonderful book. You can go as deep biblically as you want to. You can stay just at the surface of the issues that Solomon raises. You don't have to be a Bible scholar. You don't have to know a lot of background material. Solomon could have written this last week. That's how relevant the questions are in Ecclesiastes. So I am really excited about what we're going to be learning. And here's where this idea of thrive came from. It came from pondering this question, and I'll let you go that one. To live is the rarest thing in the world. Most people exist, and that is all. How do you move from just existing, just coasting through life, to thriving? How do you move into a full, joyful, meaningful, powerful, wonderful life? Consider just a few more of these quotes. Rick Warren said, "Without God, life has no purpose. Without purpose, life has no meaning. Without meaning, life has no significance or hope." And I tend to agree with him. That's why we're going to spend some time with Solomon. But let's talk about this guy by the name of Solomon. We're going to spend some time next week going into his background. Today, you don't need to know a lot of background except that. He's the third major king in Israel. He's David's son, and he could have been raised in Naperville. Because he's got all the Western, suburban, American, wealthy, successful issues. And those come out in the 12 chapters of Ecclesiastes. So that's what we're about. We're going to be talking about this wise guy by the name of Solomon. So I thought, what if I could get Solomon here on Tuesday mornings and ask him some questions? And they are listed for us in Ecclesiastes. And I thought, what if I could get Jesus to show up? So that would be the next slide. What if Jesus and Solomon could be in dialogue together? Because I think Jesus would have some answers for Solomon along the way, because Solomon raises a lot of questions. What is the meaning of life? What's the purpose of marriage and friendship and work and money and success and wealth and evil and justice and compassion and beauty? He raises all those questions. And I think Jesus might have some answers for him. And then I thought, what if those two guys would show up on Tuesday mornings, and then you had this guy? And if the three of us had a conversation with 200 women, I think it would be very interesting. And maybe we would get to this whole idea of thrive. How do you thrive? And so that's what we're talking about. So there's our logo, the idea of planting a seed and life emerges. You don't have to tell living things to live. That's just what they do. So how come we get stuck in life? How do we move past that sense? Here's a few ways that people have thought about life. Here's what one rabbi said. Life is a dream for the wise, a game for the fool, a comedy for the rich, a tragedy for the poor. Life is short. Break the rules. Forgive quickly. Kiss slowly. Love truly. Laugh uncontrollably. And never regret anything that made you smile. Well, I don't know if that's true. There's a few things that have made me smile that I regret. But we'll talk about that later. Some people say life is beautiful. Aha! And sometimes it is. And then some move past that. Life is not about waiting for the storms to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain. I like that one. But I don't think it encompasses all that life has to offer. So life is just a game. Just a game that we manipulate, move the pieces around, and we get to the end and we see who wins. Life is for deep kisses. I'm in. Strange adventures, yes, midnight swims, and rambling conversations. I'm in for all of those, but I want more than that too, don't you? And then life is too short, smile while you still have teeth. I thought this was... So this kind of summed it up. And then, of course, Shakespeare weighs in. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It's a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. So if I asked you right now, what is the meaning of your life? What is the purpose of your life? Do you think I'd get 200 answers that were the same? So we all bring meaning to this question. And it affects us because we are human beings, and human beings are meaning magnets. You walked in this morning and you saw somebody that you haven't seen in a while, and they looked at you, and if you smiled, you would interpret it one way. But if they went, you interpret it another way. Like, is my hair off? Is my lipstick not right? Does my blouse not match? And they might have been thinking about something entirely differently. But we are meaning magnets. We have to attach a meaning to something. Somebody was telling me the other day they don't like my goatee. And I said, well, that's good. It's my face. But if I told you the story of my goatee, I had a baby face until 5 years ago. And my grandson, Alex, gave me a beard trimming kit for Christmas. And I didn't have a beard. And I said, buddy, where'd you get this? And he went to his little dollar Christmas shop that they do around Christmas at the public schools. And he said, I bought this for you, Pa. It's to trim your beard. I said, but I don't have a beard. He said, you could grow one. Life has meaning. We want to have meaning. Everything has meaning. So Solomon is going to walk us through that whole concept. But Jesus has something to say as well, and this is where this whole study comes from. In John chapter 10, Jesus is in dialogue with the religious leaders and the theologians, and they ask him some questions, and he says this: the thief, the evil one, Satan, the dark lord, the world around us, the thief doesn't come except to steal, to kill, to destroy. And then Jesus says this: I have come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. How many of you want the abundant life that Jesus is talking about? I do. That's the words of Jesus. That's not Pastor Glenn promising you abundant life. That's not the government. That's not your family. That's not your spouse. That's Jesus Christ, the second person of the Trinity, the Word made flesh, the Son of the living God, saying, I have come for this purpose. This is my mission, to make sure that you have life and have it abundantly. I think Jesus would want us to thrive. And so the tension between what Solomon says and what Jesus says, interesting. The word there in John chapter 10 is the word zoe. There are two words used in the New Testament for life. The first one is psuche, which is the root word from which we get psychology. And it is generally the basics of life, breath, physical life. But the word Jesus uses there is zoe in John chapter 10. It means state of being that's real, authentic, and meaningful. Fully engaged, fully alive. And then the word full there, perissos, means abundant, exceeding, over and above, extraordinary, uncommon, beyond measure. How many of you want an abundant, exceeding, over and above, extraordinary, uncommon, beyond measure life? I'm in. Yes! So that's what we're pursuing this fall. Not my idea of abundant life, but Jesus' idea of abundant life. And to do that, we're going to use some of Solomon's questions. So that's what thrive is all about. Okay, consider this though. The Buddha said, in the end, only three things matter: how much you loved, how gently you lived, and how gracefully you let go of things not meant for you. That sounds okay, but I like Jesus' promise better. I do. And nothing against the Buddha. I like Jesus' promise better. I want life to the full. The Bible has a few things to say about this. In Micah, it says this: he's told you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with your God. So, based on all of those things, what is the point? What's the point of life? Let me start us off by reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 1. In the back of your book, there's a listing there, a link for Wikipedia, for some other articles and online tools. You can go to a Bible Gateway, a bunch of different places. If you want to look at the translation in different, or the text in different translations, you can look it up in about 60 different translations online. I'm reading from the NIV, where I think there are key words to point out that are different. I'll say them to you. So if you've got a different translation, it's okay. Just know that the language that's being translated is the Hebrew language, and it's a picture language. Each word is a picture, and you have to interpret it in the context. So I think the NIV is a pretty good translation, but whatever you're using is fine. I'm reading from Ecclesiastes chapter 1. This is Solomon at the end of his life saying, let me just write a short memoir on what I have found to be true about life. The words of the teacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. What do people gain from all the labor under at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun sets, and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south, turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, there's something new. It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What's crooked can't be straightened. What's lacking can't be counted. So I said to myself, look, I've increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I have experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly, but I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. Reading that, usually people have a number of responses. It's not a really happy chapter. But what you have to remember is Solomon had everything that any one of you in this room could possibly want. He had way more money than all of you combined. There was nothing Solomon wanted that he couldn't instantly have. So all the things that the commercials on television tell us we need to have a successful life, he had in spades. I mean, he had it times 10, times 1,000. So he applies himself to figure out, where am I going to find joy, happiness, meaning? And he goes after it with a vengeance. And this is his conclusion, that all of the things he experienced at some point in time he felt were meaningless. Now, it's real easy to judge him and say, oh, come on, how cynical. Have you ever in the middle of your life stopped and said, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Why am I making this meal one more time? Why am I making this bed? Why am I changing this diaper? Why am I going to this job? Why am I sitting in this cubicle? Why am I sitting in this church? Why am I writing one more check? Why am I paying this bill? Why am I worried about this issue one more time? It just never goes away. It keeps coming and coming and coming. If you've never looked in the mirror and said, how did I get to this place in my life? Then either you've already figured out the secret of life, or you can at least relate at some point in time to Solomon questioning it all and saying, is this it? Is this the best that it gets? So next slide. Solomon's problem of meaning, the problem examined. He says, work is hard, the generations pass, nature's cyclical, history repeats itself, nothing is new, and satisfaction is elusive. Are these ideas true? Perspective matters. His perspective matters. So what is your perspective? How do you approach these questions of work and history and all those things? He says wisdom and understanding only lead to the realization that life is tragic. At some point in time, when you're wise, you do follow these things along, and you have to conclude that there's a craziness about life. Just think with me a couple weeks ago when the first little babies were washing up on the beach. Remember seeing that picture of a three-year-old? If you don't understand when looking at that, what Solomon is getting at, that even with all the wisdom and all the knowledge and all the love of God to look at that picture and say, yeah, if you don't do that, if you say, oh, well, yeah, that's meaningful, I get it. Huh? What? So Solomon is looking out on a world and saying, you know what? Even with great wisdom, There are things that are just tragic. They're hard to understand. There are some wrongs that cannot be righted. There's something that's once lost that cannot be regained. I was talking to a friend who breast cancer and stage four. And she's 44 years old and has three kids. And she's facing end-of-life decisions. And 3 months ago, that was not anywhere on the radar screen. And as a pastor, yes, I want to comfort and I want to pray and I want to say, hold the hands of Jesus and the Lord is my shepherd and all of those things, and they are right and true and good. But still down deep at the bottom of my soul and at her soul, she's going, oh, this is the best. This is life in God's world. So Solomon can relate to the problems of a real life. Trying to really understand life, he says, is like chasing the wind. He achieved great wisdom, but that only increased his grief. Sometimes, don't you, sometimes goes, I don't want to know that. It's better if I just don't know. You ever get to that place in life? I don't want to know that stuff. So he says, meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. And you have to relate to Solomon at some point in time. So let's talk about this word meaningless. Some translations will call it vapor. Some will call it vanity. Some will say meaningless. Some will say a wisp. And that's because the Hebrew word chabel, everybody say chabel. You got to get the ch. Chabel. Very good. Bless you, sisters. You are all now Hebrew scholars. Because it can mean these three different things depending upon what context it's being used. Hebel can mean breath or vapor. Hebel can mean absurd. Chabel can mean fleeting, empty, deceitful, and worthless. The word is used over 70 times in the Old Testament, 36 of them in Ecclesiastes. So that's why it's the theme. This ripples through every single one of the 12 chapters. Behind everything that Solomon says, he's saying, you know what? It's Hebel. It's Hebel. It's this weird, strange, hard-to-describe word. And it's a combination of all those things. So when he says that life is Hebel in chapter 1, the best word picture I can give you is it's summer, and I hate to bring up illustrations from winter, but I got to go there. This one's coming from winter. How many of you, no, go back, stay there. Okay, so in the winter, how many of you like to go out when it's cold and go, and see your breath? Come on, you still do it. If you don't, you should. Come on, just play. I mean, you got to do something in the winter. So you go out and you go, and if you can see your breath, it's really cool. How long does that breath stay there? A second? Two? A nanosecond? That is Hebel. Life is, well, it's gone. It's gone. That's what Solomon says life is. Okay, go. Is life worth living? The silent cry for meaning rises from the depth of a tormented soul. The sufferer does not utter this life-changing question because he is too afraid to hear the answer. If someone presses you today on the way out of growth groups and you're talking about what you learned here and you talk about the meaning of life, what are you going to tell them? What is the meaning of life? How would you respond to that 40-something-year-old woman who's got stage 4 cancer? What is the meaning of life? How would you respond to her spouse? How would you respond to her children, to her coworkers, to her family, to her mom, to her dad? What is the meaning of death? So Solomon is going to consider all that. There aren't any questions that Solomon is afraid of. And we, all you have to do is go onto Amazon and search for meaning of life. Life is, what is the purpose of life? And this is just a sampling. Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth, Awakening to Your Life's Purpose. Shawshank Redemption is about holding on to some shred of meaning when this guy is in there falsely accused of something he didn't do, and then decades later he finally breaks out because he's held on to hope. And then Rick Warren, The Purpose-Driven Life. Paul Coelho's book, The Alchemist. People have told me, you got to read it, it's on order, should be at my front door today from Amazon. The Dalai Lama says, let me teach you the art of happiness. Will Smith played in that true story, the Pursuit of Happiness. What is the meaning of my life? He starts out homeless and ends up a wealthy stockbroker. A few years ago, Oprah was talking about the secret. The secret of life is that if you just give out positive energy to the universe will kick back positive energy. Tell that to the woman with stage 4 cancer. So there's got to be something deeper. Forrest Gump, where he travels all through American culture to basically find the meaning of life. One of my favorite books, Parker Palmer's Let Your Life Speak. How do you let the voice of God speak through you and be authentic? And then The Creator's Way or The Creative Way. Those are just a sampling. All of you know what I'm talking about. We want to know. So what is the purpose of life? The great philosophers have pursued this question as well. Friedrich Nietzsche, a great atheist, said, life is all about the will to power. If you look anywhere in society, even in marriage, in society, it's all about finding power. If I can have power over you, then I can have the life that I want. So life is about finding power. Sigmund Freud came along and said, no. We might want to have power, but the reason we want power is so we can have pleasure. We want things that please us. I think he and Solomon ought to have a conversation because Solomon went after everything that's supposed to give you pleasure and he didn't find pleasure. And then this guy by the name of Viktor Frankl came along and learned going through the Holocaust, which is probably the worst, best school of human life that I can imagine. He said, no, life is about the will to meaning. Human beings are meaning makers. I have to have meaning, otherwise I start to go insane. And he watched as the Nazis would make the Jewish prisoners and the captives in these death camps, they would make them do these meaningless tasks. They'd make them pick up a pile of rocks, move it over here, then the next day take the same pile of rocks, move it over here. And after doing that back and forth for a week or two or three, you start to go loopy and you say, there's no meaning to this. And he watched that there were two groups of people. The people that did the thing with the rocks but lost the meaning, sooner or later their immune systems broke down and they were the first ones to die. But the prisoners who said, the one thing you can't take from me is my dignity. You can't take from me my own desire to have a will to mean something. So I'm going to build the best you-know-what darn rock pile that there is. And tomorrow I'm going to build an even better one. And their immune system stayed strong, and they managed to find a survival, a life, in the worst of conditions. And so Frankl said, you know what? Power, that's great. Pleasure, that's wonderful. But if you lose meaning, if you can't have a meaning for what's happening in your life, then you're not going to be able to thrive. And so he goes after that, and he wrote a book that I highly recommend. It's called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. If you haven't read it, it's a great book to read. It's deep, it makes you think, and I personally have enjoyed it a great deal. But then we get to our problem of meaning. Think about some of the ways that you have seen meaning played out in our life, in television, in movies, in your friends, in the news, in politics. For some people, meaning of life is to realize one's potential. For some, it's to achieve biological perfection. I've been started working out more over the summer, and I love going to the fitness center because I can see all these things played out. There are people there who are just specimens of biological perfection. And they tick me off. Amazing, biological perfection. Like, whoa, sculpted, you know. And they got the workout clothes. Oh, man, they just look good. And then there are some that say, no, life is about seeking wisdom and knowledge. For some, it's to do good, to do the right thing. For some, it's to love, to feel, to enjoy life. For some, it is to have power. Some, it's to be successful. And some people say, it's just absurd. Why even ask the question? Some people say life is evil and bad. So those are some of the things that I guarantee you pick up the newspaper, watch a television program, and underneath you will see a search for an interpretation of life and what it means. Next. So, of course, Google. I want to know the meaning of life. And the guru says, have you tried Googling it? I'm not going to do this today. I might do it next week. How many of you have an iPhone with Siri? Okay, you're going to do it. I know you're going to do it. Try it. It's so fun to get into it. You got to get the right rhythm and tone of voice because she interprets it differently. But go ahead and say, Siri, what is the meaning of life? And keep pursuing that and you get some interesting answers. So let's just apply this to something that happened this week. How many of you have ever watched The View? All right, okay. I've only watched snippets of it a couple of times. It started by Barbara Walters. It's this journalistic show where they talk about topics, but they got themselves in a little bit of a bind this week, and so here's why. Let's see if this next clip plays.
The woman who once sang opera, she was incredible. You really good.
Yeah.
But then there was a girl who wrote her own monologue, which I was like, turn the volume up. Like, this is going to be amazing. Like, let's listen. And she came in a nurse's uniform and basically read her emails out loud. And shockingly did not win. I was like, that's not a real...
Seriously?
I swear to God.
Why does she have a doctor's stethoscope?
Was it about that? She helps patients with Alzheimer's, which I know is not funny, but I swear you have to see it. Like, Google it if you can. There's a woman playing violin. A new style where you really grind the bow into the strings. There was a lot happening there. You guys should check it out.
So that was a week ago on The View, and they were talking about that week that the Miss America pageant was on, and Miss Colorado came out to do her talent portion of the show, and instead of coming out and doing a dance or a song, she came out in her nurse's scrubs, and she did a monologue about what life is like as a nurse, and I think she got it right. This is what Pablo Picasso says: the meaning of life is to find your gift, the purpose of life is to give it away. Now we're getting at something that's closer to what Jesus might have had in mind next. So play this. This is Miss Colorado.
Performing an original monologue, here is Kelly Johnson, Miss Colorado.
Every nurse has a patient that reminds them why they became a nurse in the first place. Mine was Joe. Joe was in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. He had moments with and moments without his memory. But the hardest part about the aging condition for Joe were his night terrors. He would wake up in the middle of the night screaming absolute bloody murder, but if I just went in there and held his hand for a few moments, I could usually get him to calm down. But then he wanted to talk. He would ask me if I could change his treatments, and I'd say, "No, Joe, I can't. I'm just a nurse." "Well, what about my medications? Can you fix those?" And I'd say, "No, Joe, I can't. I'm just a nurse." But because I couldn't do those things for Joe, we connected on other levels. He would ask me about volleyball, we would talk about his grandbabies, and he would tease me about being the only nurse on the unit that can reach the gauze on the top shelf. It was a lot of laughs with Joe, but then one night everything changed. I found him in his room crying, and I went over to him and I lifted his head up out of his hands and I said, "Joe, I know that this is really hard, but you are not defined by this disease. You are not just Alzheimer's. You are still Joe." And he looked right back at me, almost to look through me, and said, "Nurse Kelly, then the same goes for you. Although you say it all the time, you are not just a nurse. You are my nurse. And you have changed my life because you have cared about me." And that's when it hit me. Patients are people with family and friends, and I don't want to be a nurse that ever pretends, because you are not a room number and a diagnosis when you're in the hospital. You're a person, very first. And Joe reminded me that day that I'm a lifesaver. I'm never going to be just a nurse.
Mother Teresa said, not all of us can do great things, but we can do small things with great love. And the reason I show you that clip of Miss Colorado is not to debate the merits of beauty pageants, nor to debate the journalistic accreditation of The View, it could care less, but to simply show you that there are examples all around us of the question of meaning. What is the meaning of my life? And for Miss Colorado, the meaning of her life is beyond physical beauty. She's a beautiful woman, as are all of you. Everyone at Growth Groups is beautiful, and I mean that seriously. But one day, she'll age like me, and she'll get these little age spots, and little wrinkles, and what she's up there on the stage looking like won't be the same 30, 40, 50 years from now. But I think she's got a deeper sense of something that transcends physical beauty, that transcends all those things that are like a vapor. And she's got a deep meaning to her life that includes serving another human being. And Joe, in responding back to her, talked about his meaning of his life. She said, "You're not just an Alzheimer's patient. You are Joe. You happen to have Alzheimer's. You are a human being." And so both of them shared in this moment where the meaning of their life took on great importance. If you have Alzheimer's, it's better to have it with some meaning going into it so that you can put a frame around it that at least helps you cope and that gives you strength. And The View challenged that and laughed at that and ridiculed that. Why? I can't imagine. And neither could five of their sponsors, including, I think, Johnson & Johnson, because they just dropped them. Yes! I love that when that happens. So I think Mother Teresa gets it right. Here's what Viktor Frankl said. The one thing you can't take away from me is the way I choose to respond to what you do to me. The last of one's freedoms is the ability to choose one's attitude. And the way you choose an attitude, skip to the next slide. Yeah. The way you choose your attitude is to have a deeply held system of belief, a way of thinking about life. Jesus said this, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, follow me. Whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life will find it. So think about that for a second. This is the same Jesus that said, I've come that you might have life and have it abundantly. And so for Jesus, life is filled with deep questions and deep purpose. And he says, if you really, really want to experience life where you thrive, no matter what, then give your life away in service to others. Then be a person who's constantly loving, constantly serving, constantly gracious, constantly giving your life for the service of other people to the glory of God. Jesus would say that is the deepest purpose and the deepest meaning of life. And so Solomon, I think, got off track. He started to read his own press release and he started to read his own resume and think, wow, I'm pretty cool. I've got a lot of money. I can do whatever I want. And he did. And when you approach all the things in life that most of us would think are good, work and sex and marriage and relationships and breakfast and kids and joy and movies and all those things, you can go into those with one framework and they will become meaningless. Or you can go into those with another framework, with another purpose, another deeper calling, and all of those things take on an entirely different perspective. Next slide. So they questioned Jesus one day and said, what is the essence of life? What is the law? What is it that we should obey? And Jesus nets it out for the leaders. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, with all your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you will live. So that is the great commandment. And it goes all the way back, embedded in Israel's early history, that's called the Great Shema. This is what Jesus says is the essence of life. To take all your faculties, your mind, your body, your heart, your soul, your relationships, everything that you have, and pour it into loving God. And how do you love God? By loving your neighbor and loving yourself. That's Jesus' words to us. So if you want to thrive, you got to look at everything in your life, from washing dishes to going to work, from growth groups to worship, from paying bills to gardening. Everything has to be brought into a framework where you can say, this I'm doing for the glory of God. Now let me frame that for you. A friend of mine was talking to me about his garden, and his garden is really amazing. If I touch it, it wouldn't be so amazing. It'd be brown. But he manages to grow these plants and flowers and bushes and shrubbery that's just gorgeous. And he said to me, Glenn, it's just gardening. What you do is so important. You're a pastor. Oh. I said, what I do is important, what you do is important, gardening is just as important. You're in a church that's a Lutheran church, and so we like to talk about Christianity with a Lutheran perspective. Martin Luther said, the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker are all at the same level as a pastor. My vocation is pastor, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, all have a vocation. All of it can be done to the glory of God for a deep purpose. And so I said to my friend who's gardening, I said, every single time you cultivate those flowers and those plants and you prune them and trim them and weed the garden and plant things and fertilize and you grow this amazing place that I walk in this garden and I just go, Oh, I feel like I'm back in the Garden of Eden. You've returned me to a place that only you and the Creator can bring about. And it brings me deep peace and deep joy to be here. There's a poet who said that we are here to be God's secretaries of praise. And that when we go out into nature, we are to be his secretaries. We are to write down with words the songs that the trees and the flowers sing. So I told him, you are returning to God praise every single time you trim a bush. And he started to cry. He said, I don't believe that. And so I walked him through the Psalms that talk about the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And that God looked back on his creation at the end of the 6 days, the seventh day comes around and God says, wow, this is good. No, wait a second. This is really good. And it's a garden. The first thing that God said is really good is his garden. So you and God are tight right now. He's like, I never saw it that way. Everything you do in life can be framed in a way that if you're giving glory to God, it takes on deep meaning. I was talking to someone in a nursery last year who serves in our nursery, and I had this little diaper, and they were talking about, man, we got so many kids, and we're changing diapers, and it's hard to serve in the nursery, and they're getting kind of bummed out about serving in the nursery and wondering if they were actually doing any good. And again, I heard, well, you're the pastor, you preach. And I said, while I'm preaching, some people would say too long. Those little babies are in this nursery and they are feeling the love of God because you are the maybe the first person that they're experiencing as Jesus' love in a church. New guests come and they take the little baby and they say, here, take my baby for an hour. Don't you hurt my baby. And then they come back after that hour and they don't remember anything I said. They want to know, is the baby clean? And they check, oh, you changed the diaper. And so I said, this diaper is either this plastic sack of poop or it's a covering for this little baby's skin, this tender skin that if not cared for can get a rash. And if it gets a rash, it'll be unpleasant and sick and hurtful. And then the mom will have anxiety and the dad will have anxiety because the mom has anxiety. And then they won't come back to church and they won't hear me preach long-winded sermons. So life can have meaning, even a diaper. And that's really important to me. Check out this next picture. That's my latest grandson, born yesterday. Now, check out the name. I'm like, honey, I will call it whatever you want. Thurston Aurelius Sagavo. Wow! But Thurston apparently has a Swedish connotation for thunder. Aurelius is one of the greatest Roman Caesars. I'm like, great. That's my eighth grandson. He's 8 pounds. He was born yesterday. But he wasn't born locally here. He was born on the other side of the world in a place called Papua New Guinea. Go to the next slide. And that's my wife who left 4 days ago. And after 4 flights and 38 hours, she landed in the mountains of Mount Hagen in northern Papua New Guinea. And my wife is a nurse. She's the one who told me about Miss Colorado, and she was very upset, by the way. And my wife flew there because where my daughter is, you have to bring your own nurse. And so my wife, the grandma, got to fly over there, and with 20 hours to spare, got there, managed to get some sleep, and then was there to help bring into the world our eighth grandchild. And so the two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. And my little grandson Thurston is going to ask me one day, Pa, why am I here? And I'm not going to point him to the view. I'm not going to point him to the Dalai Lama. Not going to point him to the wise philosophers. I'm going to point him to Jesus, who said, I have come that you might have life. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And I will give you abundant life. And so here is a picture of my daughter when she was here in June. And that's my daughter and her husband, Bezo, and my first 3 grandchildren, Alexander and Logan and Liam, and now Thurston up in the corner. But what you don't know is that she lives in a place that's very different. So go to the next slide. That's the waiting room at the clinic where she just gave birth. She wrote this a couple days ago on Facebook. She said, "This is the waiting room at the hospital where I'll deliver. This is no ordinary life. People ask me why I would leave the comfort and safety of the American life to spend my days here in a place full of risk, danger, disease, and discomfort. Some call it foolish, especially delivering a baby where most expats return home or to Australia. It's too risky. But I read a quote standing in line to pay for my visit today that summed it up. If God calls you to be a missionary, do not stoop to be a king." While we're not traditional missionaries working for any traditional organization, we are surely non-traditional missionaries living intentionally in a place where opportunity to influence our community and live the gospel calls to us every single day. This is my prayer, that we might live the gospel here in Papua New Guinea, honestly, humbly, lovingly, transparently, that the risk of the gospel may never outweigh the call to live it. Is life the will to power? Is it the will to pleasure? Or is life deeply meaningful when you follow Jesus Christ and he sends you out into this great world to be his agents of grace, to be his agents of purpose and beauty and truth, whether that's in your garden or in a nursery or in Papua New Guinea or in a hospital room as a nurse or as an Alzheimer's patient or as a pastor or as a growth group, small group member, wherever you are, whoever you are, God has a purpose for you, and you will find it. You will find life and you will thrive in Jesus Christ. "I have come that they might have life and have it more abundantly." That's my prayer for you, for me, for us, this season of growth groups. Each week we're going to plow through different topics and we're going to look at all these questions that Solomon raises. And then we're going to bring Jesus into dialogue with Solomon and we're going to say, well, what can we learn from this dialogue about how to apply it to my life? There are some great exercises for you to bring this into your life in practical ways every day. And I am very excited for the journey that we're on, sisters. So hang on for the ride. And at the end, I hope we can all say, yes, I am thriving. Let's pray. Lord God Almighty, you are good to us. And I thank you. I thank you for all my sisters here who come with different stories and different places in life. For some, life has been great. Summer's been wonderful. For some, it's been a struggle. Marriage issues, kids, work, finances, stuff. Lord, help us to draw strength from one another, to learn from one another, to walk through the prayers and the exercises and through those for you to draw close to us. Lord, teach us what it looks like to thrive, to live the abundant life that you promised. In Jesus' mighty name, and all my sisters said, amen. It's going to be a great year, guys.